Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harris, and it's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. Its host and founder is a remarkable woman named Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick the program off with Carol Marx in conversation with Scott Eiman. He's written 11 books, including with veteran actor Robert Wagner, the New York Times bestseller Pieces of My Heart. Today he's going to talk to Carol about his latest, John Wayne, The Life and Legend, published by Simon & Schuster.
Now, did part of your motivation for writing this biography about John Wayne go back to the 90-minute interview you had with him way back in 1973?
It was 1972. I was 21 years old and had very few credentials. I was just starting out as a writer. And he agreed to see me. He was shooting a TV special at CBS, and he was waiting to go on, and they were having delays, as they always do. And I sat with him for 90 minutes, and we talked about the movies. I didn't ask him about cancer, and I didn't ask him about politics. We just talked movies. And he was that guy on the screen, but he was also someone entirely different, someone I really hadn't expected to meet. He was calm, unassertive, thoughtful, almost contemplative, none of which particularly related to his screen character. He was also huge. A normal-sized 6-foot man could have stood in back of him and you wouldn't see him. He was about 6'4 and massive, like a football lineman, which is what he'd been actually in college. So it was an unusual experience especially for someone very young. And the reason I wrote the book, essentially, is that that guy I spent 90 minutes with, I could not find in any of the other books. The other books seemed to me to have missed his essence, his actual personality as people experienced it. So I thought I just nominated myself.
And you did a great job. And talking about his childhood, I mean, he certainly was impoverished, and he had to help with his family's living expenses, clothes, and college expenses. You think that's what helped him develop such a ferocious work ethic? Because I don't think people realized that he had that.
The family at best would have been considered lower middle class on their best day. His father was a very nice man, a kind man. He adored his father. But his father was ineffectual. He couldn't provide for his family. His mother was very demanding, very unhappy. It was not a pleasant household to grow up in. There was a lot of recriminations going back and forth all the time. And what made it even more complicated was his mother openly preferred Wayne's younger brother, named Bob.
You know why?
In later years, when Wayne became extremely successful and rich and world famous, all she ever said was, "Why wasn't Bob producing your pictures? What are you doing for Bob?" He could never get to first base with his mother. Not at all. Not ever.
And we don't know why.
He never criticized her verbally to anybody. A well-brought up Edwardian gentleman didn't do that. But in comparison to the warmth in which he talked about his father, he talked about his mother respectfully but without warmth. And that was the way he processed his disappointment and pain.
Well, you know, it just blew my mind that he could get over this very, I call it, disagreeable mother who, when a friend told her, you wrote in your book that she should be nicer to Marion, she said, "I don't give a damn about him." Now, I mean, how do you get over that?
Well, you don't get over that. You don't get over that. But it's not something that he allowed to be in the forefront of his personality. Stephanie Powers, the actress who knew him very well and worked with him, said that she thought that, as many people do when they have a problem with their mother or their father, they marry someone like that, or like their mother or their father, with the same basic kind of psychology, and try to resolve the problem in another generation. And she thought that because Wayne tended to marry kind of standoffish, aloof women, that he was perhaps marrying his mother, that he was trying to get them to love him in the way that his mother never could. And it may hold some water. That premise may, in fact, have been the truth.
you know, it does sound, you know, that it really could be true. Now, one thing I learned from your book that I never realized, that Marion was an excellent student and star athlete. I didn't know that he was a good student because he's often has been portrayed as somebody who didn't read books and wasn't interested in that kind of stuff.
True. Not only was he an excellent student and athlete, the athletics is how he got into USC. There was absolutely no money for anybody to go to college. So his football scholarship was his only entree into college. He spent two successful years at USC before he messed up his shoulder surfing. And he was a lineman. And the coach at USC didn't need a lineman who couldn't block because his shoulder was separated. So he lost his football scholarship and had to leave school, which is how he went into the movies full time at Fox, where he was working a summer job as props and general laborer. But no, he was an excellent student, and in high school he was very much the big man on campus. I mean, he wrote for the school newspaper, he acted in the drama club, he acted on stage in the school plays, he was the president of the senior class. I mean, he was absolutely one of the most important kids in school, because after an initial period of very shy and very difficult adolescence, he blossomed at Glendale High and became recognizably the man he was going to be, the early version of the man he was going to be, and very comfortable with people and a leader, very comfortable in the leading, in the leader position.
And I never realized, and I learned so many things from your book, how gorgeous he was when he started out in the movies. He was just gorgeous.
Oh, and that's why the picture on the cover is the picture on the cover. It's a picture taken of him when he was 22 or 23 years old and just breaking into the movies as an actor, as a star. And I a lot of people thought we should use a picture of him from The Searchers or The Man in Shot Liberty Valance of him, you know, on a horse or, you know, as a cowboy. And I didn't want to do that because I wanted to use a picture that would indicate this was not the John Wayne you think you know. This is a different John Wayne, which is the point of the book. This is not about the conventional John Wayne. This is about the John Wayne who was a husband, the John Wayne who was a father, the John Wayne who was a director, a movie producer, all the other roles that were kind of kept hidden by his star quality.
And the publicity that was put out about him never mentioned these things. Now, why, when he started out in the movies, did he alter his story about how he became an actor, claiming it was an accident? So I don't know why he did that.
Well, on the one hand, he's a blue-collar kid, very much a blue-collar kid. Secondly, he's a jock. And in the early part of the 20th century, a blue-collar jock is not going to go around proclaiming that he wants to be an actor because that's not a manly profession. You're supposed to be a blue-collar jock is supposed to be a football player or a cop or a fireman or one of those conventional jobs that blue-collar guys went into in that era. So he was always he wanted to give the impression that he backed into it. It dropped in his lap accidentally, and he scrapped the ball and ran with it, which is not true at all. When he started working at Fox as a prop man or a stunt man, he would pester producers to give him acting jobs. You know, he wanted to be in front of the camera from the time he was a young teenager, and he never really relented in that ambition. And he was extremely ambitious and extremely focused and disciplined, and I believe he would have been a success in any business he went into. If he hadn't gone into the movie business, he would have been a multimillionaire developer or a multimillionaire lawyer or a multimillionaire banker. He was just going to be successful because he worked and worked and worked. There was no such thing as I've had enough for John Wayne. He was always willing to put in the extra time and effort.
You know, he went from being Marion Morrison to John Wayne. He never legally adopted the name, so I found that interesting. And how did he get his name Duke?
Duke was, well, as I said, he was born the name Marion Morrison, which I'm sure caused him multiple problems at school. So when they moved to Glendale, California, when he was about 10 or 11, they had an Airedale dog. There's a picture of the dog in the book, actually. And it's a big dog. It looks like he's 70 or 80 pounds. It was a very large Airedale. And the dog's name was Duke. And he and the dog were inseparable. And the dog and he would walk, you know, through the streets of Glendale all the time. And they became known as Big Duke for the dog and Little Duke for the kid, you know. And he simply gradually took the dog's name as his nickname. And as you said, he never changed his name from Marion Morrison to John Wayne legally. On his death certificate, it says Marion Morrison, parentheses, John Wayne, which I find extremely interesting. And he always asked people to call him Duke. Nobody who knew him called him John. Nobody, unless they wanted to irritate him or they didn't know him.
I guess it was because it was a created thing.
I think that was his way of maintaining psychological clarity about who he really was in his own mind.
Now, he did create John Wayne after layer by layer, but don't you think that Marion and John Wayne really had a lot in common as far as their honesty and all those good qualities that mm-hmm. they both had?
He was honest. Yes, they both were honest. They both were forthright. They both kind of had short fuses. Wayne was not terribly patient with adults. He was very patient with children. But he tended to have a short fuse, and it would blow, and then it'd be over, and he would apologize. You know, but that was just the way he was. He had that Irish quick flair temper. But he was also totally unlike his screen character, as I found out when I talked to him. You know, as I said, he was extremely well read. He was thoughtful. He was calm. He only got upset once when I was talking to him, when I asked him about John Huston, who he'd made one picture with. And they really had blanked each other, and it was a lousy picture. He blamed Huston. He thought it could have been a good picture except for Huston. And he started to kind of fume, and he started to breathe heavily like a locomotive building up steam. And I thought, I better change the subject.
That's Scott Eyman in conversation with Carol Marks. He's written the book John Wayne, The Life and Legend, published by Simon & Schuster. And we have more of Carol in conversation with Scott Eyman coming up next when A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant. Most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, let's get right back into that Carol Marks conversation with author Scott Eyman. In this part of the discussion, they talk about John Wayne's relationship with director John Ford and his affair with Marlene Dietrich.
Now, do you think that despite the fact that John Wayne, he won the Oscar for True Grit, that he never received really the credit that he should have had for his acting skills?
Because that's true. That's true. He never did. And even though, I mean, if you look at, say, a picture like She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, and then a year later he does Red River. Well, there's a 180-degree gap between Nathan Brittles in She Wore Yellow Ribbon and Tom Dunson in Red River. The latter is fierce, angry, a real SOB, you know, and Nathan Brittles in She Wore Yellow Ribbon is very gentle. He's lonely. He's a romantic. There's absolutely nothing. They have nothing in common other than the actor playing them is very large. But he never really got credit for his versatility as an actor and for his willingness to try. I think that's because he would, when John Ford was directing him or Howard Hawks was directing him, he would go into places that he wouldn't go on his own as an actor. When he produced his own pictures, he tended to do the John Wayne persona that we came to know and love. When he would work with Ford or Hawks, he would venture into very dark areas that I don't think he would have gone on his own.
And talking about John Ford, which you just mentioned, he played such a big role in his life. Guess he was a father figure, but he certainly wasn't always kind. Let's putting it mildly to John Wayne.
Right. Well, after his father, Wayne, because as I said, his father was emotionally accessible, but a failure by any stretch, by any rational judgment. He seemed to gravitate towards authority figures, father figures, who were more withholding in terms of emotion, but also unreservedly successful and competent and masters of their universe. His football coach at USC, a great football coach named Howard Jones. Howard Jones was the kind of guy you could run for 200 yards for him, and all you'd get was a nod. I mean, he was not one of those coaches who throws his arms around you and hugs you and tells you he loves you. Not on the worst day of his life would he do that. And Wayne loved Howard Jones. And Ford was the same kind of personality. You know, he would give Wayne a hard time in public all the time. You know, you walk like a fairy. Can't you walk like a man? You can't act your way out of a paper bag. He could be really tough on Wayne in public. Their letters back and forth when one of them was out of town or on vacation are completely different. Ford's letters to Wayne are very typically fatherly. They're supportive. They're loving. They're openly affectionate, and vice versa. So it was kind of a binary relationship. Ford
I would say so.
Would not let on that he loved Wayne. In private, it was very much an obvious issue right on the table. They were very close. It was a father-son relationship.
Now, we've talked about one of the reasons that probably his three marriages ended because the wives were very much like his mother. But he was a wonderful father, even though he was away a lot. But when he was home, he was really into his kids.
Yeah, he was. He was a good father, allowing for the fact that he was a workaholic. And he didn't have any hobbies. He didn't really play much golf. Once in a while, he'd go shoot some birds, go, you know, duck hunting or something. But very rarely. He wasn't a hunter. He didn't really have any hobbies other than his profession, and he adored his profession. He loved making movies. He loved the process of making movies. It was not ever boring to him. It was what he loved doing the most. So he would come home after shooting a picture, and he'd be glad to be home. And in a week or two and three at the max, he'd start to get very restless and start looking around for something to do, for something, somewhere to go to work, you know. So the kids would see him in bursts. When he was there, he was a very good father. But he wasn't there a lot of the time because he really psychologically needed to work in a way that he didn't need to be at home.
Now, I understand, you know, about the marriages, and he had lots of love affairs, but gosh, I can't understand why he would have a lengthy affair with Marlene Dietrich because I just didn't see the combination. So what was up with her?
It was an interesting combination, very interesting combination. But it worked for a fair amount of time. And because each of them was married, they both know it wasn't going to go anywhere. So it was something they enjoyed as a sexual rest stop, you might say.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to divorce his wife over Dietrich, and she certainly wasn't going to divorce her husband over John Wayne. This was something they both enjoyed because they were so dissimilar from each other, you know. And I'm sure she was good for him in all sorts of ways. She was excellent for him in terms of show business because she kind of lifted him up to another level in terms of the people around him. Her agent was Charles Feldman, who was one of the two or three best agents in the movie business. And shortly after they started their affair, Charles Feldman became John Wayne's agent. And he stayed John Wayne's agent for the rest of Feldman's life. And her business manager was a man named Boo Ruse, who handled a lot of people and did well by them. And shortly after they started their affair, Boo Ruse became John Wayne's business manager. So these people became his support staff, and they helped him function at a higher level as a movie star than he would have without them. So she was very important to him in all sorts of ways.
I guess so. And finally, why do you think John Wayne remains one of America's favorite movie stars so long after his death? And don't you think his conservative beliefs, which were considered very extreme in the 20th century, that become almost mainstream by some people in the 21st century?
Yes, the latter, definitely. He was regarded at the time as an outlier in terms of his beliefs. And some of the things he said would raise eyebrows even today. In terms of the former, he was very lucky in terms of his collaborators, the people that he bonded with. He made 15 or 16 films with John Ford. If you take those 15 or 16 films out of his filmography, if you take the 3 or 4 films he made with Howard Hawks out of his filmography, so basically you're talking 20 movies. If you take those 20 movies out, it's a very different career. It's a career on a much lower level. If you take Stagecoach and Fort Apache and Shoe Boy Yellow Ribbon and The Searchers and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance out, you have a much less distinguished career. In Red River, you have a much less distinguished career. And I don't know if I would have written the book. But the fact is that those 20 pictures, and that's a lot of good pictures in a career. That's a hell of a lot of good pictures in a career. Cary Grant didn't make 20 good pictures. Clark Gable didn't make 20 good pictures. But Wayne did because of his relationship with Ford and because of his relationship with Howard Hawks.
Great point.
So though I think that reason and is one of the reasons that he's still remembered, because of the density and the quality of the movies. Another reason is, cumulatively, over his 40-year career, he became more than just another actor tied to his generation. He really became a metaphor for America. And you can argue about what he represents, what kind of America he represents, but you can't deny his impact on the culture and his impact on the self-image of Americans.
Scott Iman, in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled John Wayne, The Life and Legend, published by Simon & Schuster. Coming up next, a look behind the scenes at Talk Radio with Kevin Casey on A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And this is the point in the program where we take a peek behind the scenes and look into the world of radio from an industrial point of view. Our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, is also the vice president and executive editor of two trade publications that serve radio. One is Talkers Magazine, which is on the talk side of the business, and the other is Radio Info on the music side of the business. And Kevin, talking about behind the scenes, there was a very big story this week in the radio business. Let's share it with our listeners.
Yeah, folks might not know the name, but a gentleman named Tom Round passed away earlier in the week, and he was very influential in making a very popular radio show popular, and it was American Top 40 with Casey Kasem.
And it's kind of ironic that with Casey Kasem's tragic personal family situation and health crisis in the news, that the man that was instrumental in inventing and promoting and, you know, building the vehicle upon which Casey Kasem became well known, the syndication of the legendary radio program, the syndicated program American Top 40, that he died this week, Tom Rounds. And Tom Rounds died by
He was 77 years old, going on 78. And I don't know if there's a lesson to be learned in this, but it was one of those cases where it was considered to be routine surgery. Routine surgery, and then they die. Now, I've known people, I think we all have knowledge of people who've gone in for, you know, a tonsillectomy and came out dead or something minor. I'm not sure what the surgery was in the case of Mr. Rounds, but that is all the more shattering. I knew him pretty well over the years and had spoken to him a number of times in the past year. And he's one of those guys that, in spite of the fact that he's pushing 80, he sounds on the phone like he's 35.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that classic top 40 voice, you know, words.
Yeah.
And Casey Kasem and American Top 40 really were a breakthrough in terms of, that was one of the first elements that ushered in the modern era of radio in a broad strokes level. Wouldn't you agree?
No question about it. No question about it. He was a frontiersman in the world of syndication.
You know, I remember listening to Casey Kasem in New York, where I grew up and lived. And we're going back to the early 70s. Casey Kasem was, it was like so strange to hear Casey coast to coast, Casey Kasem in Hollywood on your radio, because radio was local. I mean, they were national broadcasts, but DJs, national DJs, guys spinning records and playing hits and doing a countdown, that was very, very exotic.
Yeah.
And now we take that for granted, of course. And if people are just tuning in and wondering why we're talking about Casey Kasem, we're talking about somebody else involved with Casey Kasem who passed away this week. Tom Rounds, one of the pioneers and legends within the radio industry and within syndication. As far as, you know, going into the hospital for an operation and not coming out, I mean, as I said before, there's a lesson to be learned in this, but I don't want to scare anybody.
No, you don't. And, you know, I think, like you said, Michael, everyone probably knows someone, or at least knows someone who knows someone, who went in for something routine and there was a complication of some sort. And it certainly does happen. And any physician will tell you that there's nothing that goes on that is without risk when you're talking about a surgery or a procedure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's rare, obviously, what happens.
Yeah, and you sign a form when you go in for even the most routine surgery that says that you're aware that anything could happen. And it's kind of like those drug disclaimers for those drug commercials. The following can give you this, that. But I mean, it's almost humorous. And why would you want to take this to cure a sinus, you know, congestion? Or
right.
You know, it's like, wow. But now this certainly is risk in everything, and it's all how you want to prioritize, rather, your risk or your fear of risk.
Yeah.
And to teach somebody to be fearful, like a kid or someone in terms of your preaching on the radio or whatever, to become fearful of unlikely events is not a good idea. So that being said, thank you for joining us. Kevin Casey is the Vice President and Executive Editor of Talkers. Talkers is at talkers.com. Radio Info, for those of you who like music radio, it's at radioinfo.com. Thank you, Kevin Casey. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Grey continues with Steve Wiseman in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives.
Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, the rest of the hour. He's talking now with Dr. Roshini Raj. She's a board-certified gastroenterologist and an internist with a medical degree from the New York School of Medicine and an undergraduate degree from Harvard. She's a smart cookie. She's going to talk about reinventing yourself after 50.
You know, one of the things that immediately comes to mind is this particular program about helping women reinvent themselves over 50 sort of implies that what worked before for women when they were under 50 is no longer working. Is that correct? What's not working?
Well, you know, I think that age is an interesting age because this is the time in a woman's life where there are some transitions. So, for example, children may be out of the house at this time. Maybe they have been in a career for a good 20, 30 years, and they're ready to do something new. Maybe that career isn't quite right for them anymore. So I think this is a time where women start to kind of re-examine what's going on in their lives, and many of them want to change. In fact, in this survey that was conducted by Moore and by Merck, who's the makers of Oxycurl for Women, they found that the vast majority, about 90%, 7% of women in the survey did want to reinvent themselves in some way.
Were there any particular ways that women wished to reinvent themselves that might have seemed surprising or unexpected?
Well, there were a few. You know, I think that career is the thing we sort of think about first when we think about reinvention. But there were many women who said they wanted to reinvent themselves in terms of travel, maybe traveling more, seeing more of the world, which they felt would really be life-changing for them. Some women said they wanted to reinvent their health, so take more charge of their health, become more healthy. You know, there are conditions that really can affect their ability to reinvent themselves, health conditions, things like overactive bladder, for example. So really taking charge of that, managing those symptoms was one of the things that women really did prioritize. Another one that I found interesting was volunteering. Many women said they wanted to incorporate more volunteering or giving back into their lives, and that was something that they really wanted to reinvent.
What kind of obstacles do women over 50 face when they start going through this process?
Well, the number one obstacle we found in the survey, almost 60% of women reported finances as an obstacle towards reinvention. And that makes a lot of sense. A lot of the things we're talking about, whether it's travel or starting a new business, do require some financial capital to begin. But other obstacles were things like health issues, for example, or even confidence, just the confidence to try something new, the confidence in yourself. I think is a big barrier for women. And I think that one of the helpful things to overcome that is to really sit down and make a list of all of the attributes, all of the good qualities you have that could help towards reinvention. And these are things that you found have helped you achieve what you have achieved so far. And that might be your organizational skills in running a household with kids, or it may be something you've done in your past career, things that your friends are telling you that you're good at. If you write down all of those qualities that you have, that's one way to get started on your path towards reinvention.
You know, it certainly is about living with a passion, living with also an awareness of time. One of the things, and you mentioned as far as the finances, but also once you've got your goals, which helps so much, you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you're going. And what about educating yourselves with the things that you need to learn to do these careers or make these health changes? Where do you go for all this important information?
Absolutely. I think information is vital when you're trying to reinvent yourself, and that's part of this program that we're doing today. And there's a site called moreopendoors.com. If you go there, you can, first of all, enter this contest that More Magazine is sponsoring, where the winner will actually get $10,000 towards the reinvention, as well as a personal consultation with a certified reinvention coach, Pamela Mitchell. But also on the website are a host of tips and different tools that you can use to reinvent yourself. Different, you know, pieces of advice actually created by Pamela Mitchell that she's used with her clients over many years.
Now, you are obviously a nationally recognized women's health expert. Do women in general, I know that's kind of a tough thing to say in general, but do women take care of their own health enough? It seems most of the women I know, including my wife, are taking care of all of the family, and then something with her, it's no, I'll get around to that. Do women prioritize their own health enough?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head, Steve. Basically, women spend so much of their time and focus on the other people in their life, their loved ones, and they often do neglect their own health, which is a big mistake. I mean, what I tell women who tell me they don't have time to take care of themselves, they don't have time to go to those doctor's appointments or pay attention to their bodies, I say, all of those people that depend on you, that you care about so much, where are they going to be if you do get sick, if you get really sick, you know? So women really need to focus on their own health, on their own bodies, pay attention to their symptoms. Don't just ignore an ache or pain or being very tired. Don't just attribute it to, well, I didn't get a good night's sleep. If it's happening a lot, it could be a sign of something more serious. And absolutely, women need to focus on that and prioritize their health. That really is the first step towards any type of reinvention, because no one's going to have the energy or motivation to make a big change in their life if they're not feeling well.
What about the partners, the spouses in the lives of these women? What can we do to kind of show our support? I know take care of ourselves more, but that's not going to happen. So what else can we do?
Well, it's a great point that the other people in the life of the woman who's trying to reinvent themselves, those people have to be a source of huge support. And first of all, just encouragement, you know. Instead of poo-pooing someone's dreams, encourage them. Say that you do believe in them. It really goes a long way when you feel that other people have confidence in you. It really helps with your own confidence. And then on a very practical level, helping out so that that woman has the time and the energy to focus on herself and focus on her dreams. So maybe it is that you do the laundry a couple times a week, or you take the kids out, or you cook dinner, so that she has a little bit of time to really start working on her own path and her new goals that she set for herself.
Well, in my household, my wife would burn water, so that's not going to be a problem. I'll do the cooking
and
to give her that time. And you know, the whole, you're right, it becomes a family thing. The woman in there who has been supporting everybody, the rest of us have got to step up. What about mentors?
Yeah.
Are mentors helpful, and where do you find them?
I think mentors are very helpful, and I think that if you talk to a lot of successful women, they have faced a lot of challenges on the way, and they're happy to help other women who are going through those earlier stages of reinvention. So, you know, whether it's, I would say the first thing is have the confidence to ask a mentor. Go up to someone, maybe you've heard them speak or you've read a book you know, these days you can pretty much find out everyone's email or contact information somewhere or another. Reach out to people and ask for help. There are also women's business associations. Pamela's Reinvention Institute has a website, and there's some resources there. But just talking to women, networking in general is a great thing to do. And by the way, we're talking a lot about women, but men want to reinvent themselves too. And a lot of men go through, you know, career changes or just points in their life where they're kind of reexamining where they're at and they're ready for a change. So this is not just something that women go through.
That's Dr. Roshini Raj in conversation with Steve Wiseman. If you'd like more information, go to moreopendoors.com. Coming up next, Steve Wiseman joins us again. He's going to talk about eBay hacking. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We've come to the final segment of our program, and we're continuing our conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who is an enemy. He is an enemy of people who are con artists. He is a defender against fraud. His website is called Scamicide.com. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. He's here now to tell us about eBay hacking. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, the online auction website eBay, a lot of people use it, just announced recently that it had been hacked. Customers' names, encrypted passwords, email addresses, physical addresses, phone numbers, and dates of birth of as many as 112 million customers were stolen. Now, right now it doesn't appear that credit card information was taken, but that's only a minor consolation. eBay's urging its customers to change their passwords for eBay, and if you're one of the many people who use the same username and password for all your accounts, you should change your username and password for those other accounts as well. If you're an eBay user, it's very important that you do this right away, because it's already quite late. Although eBay only discovered the hacking within the last week or so, the hacking went on between late February and early March. So hackers already have had this information, which they may be using themselves or selling to the black market to identity thieves. eBay's already notifying customers by email to change their passwords, but if you get such an email and it contains a link to change your passwords, I urge you not to do it, not to click on that link, because it may be an email from an identity thief posing as eBay through a counterfeit phishing email that appears to come from eBay. But if you click on that, you may end up downloading keystroke logging malware that'll steal all the information from your computer. Now, even though passwords that were stolen were encrypted, you shouldn't feel too safe. Because if your password isn't a complex one, there are computer programs that identity thieves use to break this encryption and gain your access to your password. And once they have that, and your username, if again you are one of the many people who use the same username and password for all of your accounts, you're in serious jeopardy in regard to all of your online accounts, which could include online banking. So, what do you do? If you're an eBay user, go to the eBay website and change your password to a complex but easy-to-remember password that includes a combination of capitals and small letters as well as other signs. Something, just as an example, I don't like passwords with capital letters for each of the words, an apostrophe in there, and throw in a couple of exclamation points is actually a great password and easy to remember. And make sure you use different passwords for each of your accounts so that if one of your accounts is hacked, and it will be because it just is going to happen again and again, you don't have to change them all. Now, a good way to remember your password is to take that basic password and adapt it to a particular account. So you can have, I don't like passwords, Amazon, triple question marks or triple exclamation points. If you're an eBay user, you also want to be particularly vigilant now because hackers have your contact information now, and you're more likely to receive a personally adapted phishing email called spear phishing, in which the email you receive is coming to you directly instead of a dear customer. And as always, remember my motto, trust me. You can't trust anyone. Never click on links in emails unless you're absolutely confirmed they're legitimate. And make sure you keep your anti-malware and antivirus security software on all of your electronic devices up to date.
That's Steve Wiseman on A Touch of Gray talking about eBay hacking. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, and visit Scamicide.com. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, putting it all together.
Thank you to Kevin Casey, and thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of everybody here at Touch of Gray, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.